Hello and welcome to Caregiver Conversations, the podcast where we center the stories, strategies, and strength behind caregiving. I'm your host, Christy King, Executive Director of the Southeast Michigan Senior Regional Collaborative.
And I'm your co-host, Antonia Harbin, Chief Operating Officer at Hannon Center. Each episode, we uplift the voices of caregivers and experts who help us better understand the realities of caregiving and the systems that support or challenge it.
Yes, and today's conversation is all about the caregiving journey, advocacy, and the growing need for caregiver support. We'll be exploring how personal experience can shape purpose and how caregivers can find the resources and support they need along the way. We're joined today by Mary K. Clark, Dr. Clark as we may call her, Senior Advisor for Caregiving at the Community Foundation for Southeast Michigan. Mary brings both professional expertise and lived experience to this work, and we're honored to have her here to share her story and insights. Dr. Clark, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for the invitation.
And to start us off, Dr. Clark, can you share a little bit about your caregiving journey and how caring for your mother shaped the work that you do today?
I'd be honored to do that and share my mother's story. Caregiving for me has been something that I saw my parents doing all of my life, but I didn't realize what I had learned from them until I got a call from my older sister, Linda, on February 11th, 2011. And that day sticks in my mind because when I got that call, I was at work. I was assistant dean at Wayne State University College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences. I knew that my life had changed, and I knew that I needed to take time to plan what I was going to do, because I knew I wasn't going to return to work for a while. My mother had fallen. My younger sister had discovered her when she returned from work that afternoon. So we didn't know how long my mother had been laying on the floor. They took her to the hospital. So that's when my sister called me. So I'm 90 miles away. My family is in Millington near Frankenmuth. So I knew I had to go home, prepare some things to take there to stay for a while. And so in my mind, I think at that point, I knew that caregiving was something that doesn't only require you to do things for the person that you're caring for. It requires you to do things for yourself. And that was unintentionally my self-care, because I knew that it was going to be a job that I had not applied for. I had been hired, and I was going to be responsible for showing up every day to take care of whatever needed to be done. So that's where it started.
Well, I like the way you say that it was a job that you were hired for. Not necessarily did you apply, but you were hired to do it, and you had to be ready to step right in. So,
and you recognized that transition. You recognized that there was going to be a transition, and that transition was for you, was for your family as well, and that life was different moving forward. At that moment, because you were the assistant dean, so that's a huge responsibility and a huge role as well. How did that impact? How was your work experience at that moment, and how did your work environment support you in that?
I was very fortunate to work for an employer that not only recognized employees needed flexibility in scheduling, but I had also worked for a wonderful group of individuals, you know, that I worked for and that I worked with, that we supported each other in their family journeys. I took advantage of the employee assistance program. I took advantage of the Family Medical Leave Act, FMLA. I took a leave of absence because I knew, again, that I wasn't going to be able to do both jobs. And caregiving is and has been called that invisible second job that many people have. And so I knew that I needed to take advantage of whatever benefits were available to me so that I could step away and not feel like I was leaving my responsibilities unattended to.
So you've also been involved with AARP as a volunteer advocate. How has that experience expanded your perspective on caregiving beyond even your personal journey?
Those two things actually coincided. My caregiving experience and my AARP experience were happening simultaneously because at that time, the associate state director in the Detroit area for AARP, she was a former colleague, and she knew that I was caregiving for my mother. We talked about some of the things that I was doing for my mother, and she asked me if I would be willing to share some of those things in a pilot program that they were launching for AARP for caregivers. What I had done was being resourceful and listening to things that were available for people needing care. My mother was a survivor of a veteran. My father had served in the Army, and my sister had heard about veterans' aid and attendance benefits. And because all the funds that you need and that are available to you are something that caregivers certainly should take advantage of. And so I did a little research, and I saw that you could apply for these benefits. And I had successfully applied for those benefits and received them for my mother. And my friend Lisa, who worked with AARP, asked me would I share that process with a caregiver group so that they could be aware of those benefits that are available for veterans and their families. And so after I did that, she asked me, was I interested in becoming an AARP volunteer? And so that's kind of where that journey began.
That easy transition. We often don't know where we're going to need to show up until we just show up in that space, and then it just happens. And I'm sure that information is beneficial, or was very beneficial to the community, because it's often very difficult to connect with the veterans' benefits and what that looks like and what people are eligible for. We have that conversation often with caregivers. In your current role, you work closely with organizations supporting caregivers. What are you seeing right now with trends and the growing needs in the journey that a lot of caregivers experience and the organizations that are touching them?
Well, first of all, I think one of the challenges is that a lot of caregivers don't identify as caregivers, whether it be just because of what you do for mom or grandma or an uncle or auntie. You're just helping out. And so to be identified as a caregiver and then to realize that there's benefits or support for caregivers are two totally different things. So that's one of the biggest challenges. The other challenge with caregivers knowing that there's benefits is that they're not all in one place and they're not easily identifiable. It's like a treasure hunt. It's like a treasure hunt that you don't even know that it's going on. You don't know that there's treasures, and you certainly don't have a map to find them. But what I would say for anybody that is helping a family member or a friend with any needs that they have, you don't have to identify as a caregiver. Just know that there's support available to you. Look at senior centers. Look at area agencies on aging in your area. Look at any county services and ask questions at those locations, because that's where the treasure hunt might start to have benefit for you.
And with caregiving, we know that, you know, many times they say that the caregiver may not outlive that care recipient. And that's due a lot of times to the fact that they may not be connected with resources. Can you tell us a little bit more about what caregiver burnout really looks like. Have you experienced that, or can you tell us about that experience?
Caregiver burnout is one of the most unrecognized aspects of being a caregiver, because I think it's the adrenaline rush that a caregiver has to be on all the time. You're firing on all cylinders from all directions. You have to be on 24 hours, 7 days a week. So many times caregivers don't even realize that they're exhausted and burnout. A prime example, during my caregiving experience for my mother, I had a torn rotator cuff tear that I knew when it happened, but I didn't have time to attend to it because I was so focused on making sure that my mother had everything that she needed. So I was able to suppress the pain that I was feeling. It was almost like it didn't exist for a good 2 years until after my mother passed away. And then I began feeling this pain in my shoulder that had been there, but all of a sudden it was just on fire. And it was something that reminded me that I wasn't giving the self-care to myself that I was telling everybody else that they need to, that was on our caregiving team. And so many times caregivers just don't have the bandwidth to think about themselves. In many instances, their health goes unchecked and things happen.
I have a question that just came to mind, and it kind of goes back a little bit. And I was just wondering, because we talk about and you identified and we say it probably at every podcast recording that we do, that people don't identify themselves as caregivers. When you got that phone call in 2011, you knew things were changing, but did you have the language at that moment to say, I'm going to be a caregiver? Or it was just that thought of, I got to go take care of mama and help my sister. That language wasn't there yet.
That language wasn't there.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, what I realized I was, because my mother had to have 24-hour, 7-day-a-week care. She could not be left alone. She had dementia, and she had fallen, broken her hip, and she was wheelchair-bound. So from October 2011 until she passed away in January 2015, someone was with her every minute of the day. That required for us 12 caregivers. My sisters and myself were on that team. We had two friends of the family that were caregivers. We had two paid home health care companies, one that provided 24-hour care, one that provided daytime care, and we utilized the benefits, the respite benefits of the community, of our local community. So I was then the HR director of my mother's caregiving team.
I love it.
I was also coordinating at any given time between 12 and 15 caregivers' schedules. So I was a scheduler. There were conflicts between caregivers, even though many of them weren't there at the same time. But in transitioning, there were personality conflicts. I became a referee. There were some nursing skills that I had to acquire, so I became a nurse. There were some financial aspects of the process that I needed to chip in a few dollars here and there. So I was the financial supporter. So none of those titles that I know I was stepping into when I became a caregiver. So
I love it. I think you gave us all the titles that we never think about.
A new language.
Yes, a totally new language that we are going to be writing down. And so podcasts out here, you guys got to write those down because that's super important. I love
that. Yeah, that is
that analogy.
The analogy between the job, the hiring, and the team. I love that too, you know, who's going to be on the caregiving team and all of the different aspects of that. And sometimes there is that, all of those things, financial and the referee, we don't we sometimes mention that, but that's really a major thing, having to deal with conflict. So, wow, that is a great new language, Dr. Clark. Thank you for sharing.
And at some point, I did return to work. And so I was doing 90% of those things from at least 90 miles away while I was doing my full-time job. Mm-hmm. So that's why caregivers don't think of themselves as caregivers, because they have to fit in that role with all the other things that's going on in their life.
And it's definitely with all of those titles, when you dig deep, because that's digging deep into the title of caregiver is very overwhelming. How would you recommend current caregivers, or those that's in that space may not be identifying yet, but those that are in a space, how would you recommend they begin searching for resources or developing that team or being that HR director? How would you recommend them starting? Where would they start?
Asking for help. And in asking for help, what I learned is if you ask for task-specific things from individuals, it makes it easier for them to help you. So there might be somebody that wants to bring by some paper products, you know, some toilet tissues, some paper plates, some things so that the caregiver doesn't have to wash dishes all the time. So, you know, ask somebody if they can bring by some paper products. Somebody might just want to help clean up some things around the yard. So let people know specific things that they can do to help you. Also, family members are going to have various roles. You can't expect every family member to step up in the same way that you are. So whatever family members are able to do, accept that and find other options if you don't have enough family members. If you belong to a faith-based organization, there's always someone that is willing to maybe come and sit with your loved one for an hour while you run to the post office or run to the bank, someone that you trust. Because again, it's that trust aspect that many of us don't want to let too many people into our home, because, you know, we're protective of our loved one or our care recipient. But just ask for help and accept help. That's so important.
I was just wondering, in terms of, you were talking about tasks, and as your family members may be signing up for different tasks, or you may be asking them to take on different tasks in caregiving, how do you get those resources to help you with the task that, you know, you have on that caregiving journey?
That is part of the challenge, but that is part of the challenge that there are so many ways to find the answer. Let me give an example, and maybe that'll help in responding to that answer. Many benefits are available if a person is Medicaid eligible. Many benefits are available if someone lives in a specific area, whether they are Medicaid eligible or not. And so I think that's where you start locally, is looking to those places that may be those sources of those resources. For example, the area agencies on aging are a tremendous resource. They may not be the direct service provider, but they may know who provides that service. So that's one place to start. For those who are Medicaid eligible, I think the challenge is a lot of that information has to be accessed using technology. You can go to the offices now, but since the pandemic, a lot of those processes have been simplified so that you have to go online, whether that be on a computer or on your phone. And in doing anything that requires Medicaid eligibility, it has to be completed correctly or you will get denied. So it requires a good amount of patience and attention to detail. So if there's a family member that is good at attention to detail and has a good amount of patience, that's the person that you would say, check on Medicaid benefits that we might be eligible for. If someone is good at looking for resources in this, where you might even be able to involve some of the younger family members who are very tech savvy, who are really good at searching for things, have them look for any type of resources, senior resources that are available for daycare, adult day services, or caregiving services. Again, that's just a starting point, because those will lead you to other organizations that might have respite care for caregivers. And respite is defined in a variety of ways. Be able to send a trained home health agent to the house so that they can sit with your care recipient while the caregiver goes and does grocery shopping or goes and spends a couple of hours doing something that will give them a break. So those are just some examples. I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah. You tied it all together.
What a nice, neat bow.
Yeah.
I do have a question about, as far as the national landscape in caregiving, it seems like there's been an increased awareness, increased discussions. You know, there's documentaries, there's a lot of, and I don't think it's just in the circles that I run in. I literally think that nationally we're seeing it more. We're seeing more information about caregiving and things like that. Do you feel like the awareness is really translating into the support that's needed for caregivers, or that it will trans? And I know that's kind of a difficult question, but at the same time, it's really, you're seeing really an uptake. And I'm just wondering to get your perspective on that.
There certainly is an increased awareness, and especially because there are several national organizations that have partnered to elevate the conversation. And of course, I have to refer to all the work that AARP does. And just recently, there was a report that AARP, the Public Policy Institute, launched in a conversation about valuing the invaluable in 2026. And I'm not going to provide a whole lot of details and statistics, because you can go to aarp.org/caregivers and find out all the information you want. But they attributed family caregivers' financial contribution, or their contribution to the healthcare system, as equaling $1 trillion. So the work, if all family caregivers were paid an average of $20.41 an hour, that would be equivalent to $1 trillion of support that's provided to the healthcare system because of family caregivers. I can't even imagine what $1 trillion worth of support looks like. And so that shows you the value of what family caregivers, however they identify, are contributing to supporting the economic value that caregivers provide. The conversation is national, and it's receiving more attention. And that's why it's so important for caregivers to understand their value, take care of themselves, realize that self-care is necessary. And if we don't take care of ourselves as caregivers, we're not going to be there to care for our care recipient.
Can you also talk a little bit more about your current role, what you do now? Because I saw that, and we've talked about AARP and, you know, your role as an assistant dean when your mom had her fall. But can you tell us a little bit more about what you do today as an advocate?
I am honored to do so. I think I'm one of the luckiest people in the world to have the position that I do at the Community Foundation for Southeast Michigan as Senior Advisor for Caregiving. I work with several organizations in the 7-county Southeast Michigan district area who provide the direct support for caregivers. I work with the Ralph C. Wilson Jr. Foundation, who supports the Legacy Caregiving Fund and a grant that we provide each year to these organizations. Usually it's between 10 and 12 organizations that benefit from the grant. And what they do is provide support to caregivers of older adults through whatever their services that they offer through their organizations. So those are the hidden treasures that are really not hidden because they're organizations within the communities, but it's something that they are good at doing because they know their communities. They know the communities they serve and the individuals in their communities. And they receive various funds for support of caregivers. As an example, since we mentioned the Hannon Center earlier, the Hannon Center has been a recipient of our Legacy Caregiving Funds to support their Daybreak program. The Daybreak program provides respite opportunities for informal caregivers of older adults in the Detroit area. And so that's one of those ways that the Ralph C. Wilson Jr. and the Community Foundation for Southeast Michigan partner with the Hannon Center so that you can do the work that supports those in your community in a way that I could not do it, or the Ralph Wilson Jr. Foundation could not do it alone. So that makes me really fortunate to be able to partner with a variety of organizations as they do the work and as we support them in doing the work.
Right. And yeah, these programs and the support there is needed so much. And like you said, those individual organizations, they're really able to use those dollars to help certain aspects of caregiving and move that agenda forward. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. As we continue to round out this interview, I have a question. What do you wish you had have known to do differently? Or what do you wish you would have known before this journey started?
I wish I would have known that it's okay to ask for help. That you don't have to do everything alone, and people are willing to help. I wish I also would have known to take a little bit better care of myself sooner, and that self-care is part of the caregiving process. And I also wish I would have known that there are organizations like those that are served by the Community Foundation for Southeast Michigan that received the Legacy Caregiving Fund, because those are the kind of support mechanisms that we're fortunate to have in the Metro Detroit area that many other communities don't have in the same magnitude that we have here. Certainly, it's not enough for everyone, but it's a start, and it's a wonderful benefit that we have in this 7-county area.
And you mentioned so many great messages and really advice already, but is there any other message that you would give a caregiver listening today so they truly take what you said to heart, or anything else you may share with us today?
I think it's really important to tap into those community supports that caregivers have, whether it be your faith-based organizations that you belong to. There's many opportunities to rely on the support that's built into those communities, whether it be social support, emotional support, financial support, or information about securing your finances so that yourself and your family are protected.
So for those that's listening, we'll include helpful resources in the episode description, including your local area agency on aging, AARP caregiving resources, caregiver action network tools as well. These can be great starting points as you navigate your caregiving journey.
And thank you to everyone who's listening to Caregiver Conversations today. We hope today's conversation gave you new perspectives and encouragement.
If you'd like to learn more about Caregiver Conversations or connect with the SRC, you can visit semisrc.org or email at info@miseniors.org or call 888-341-8593. We'd love to hear from you.
And if you'd like to reach out to the Hannon Center, please contact us at www.hannon.org or 313-838-1300. And to our listeners, if you found today's conversation helpful, please subscribe, leave us a review, and share this episode with caregivers and advocates in your community.
Don't forget to check the episode description for resources and tools mentioned in today's episode. Until next time, take care and keep caring.